Top of the top, top of the morning. Welcome to the Bedroom to Boardroom podcast. This is your host, AJ. Throughout this podcast, we'll be sitting down with people from our community who are making moves, really deep diving into their success stories, understanding their background, their trials and tribulations, things they've had to overcome, really with the focus of, you know, motivating a new generation, hopefully giving you some tangible insights for you to actually act on. So nevertheless, you know, stay tuned.
And sometimes it's for me, sometimes it's hard when you don't see yourself in the room and you're the only one representing the culture that you're from.
Is there an additional pressure to perform at your best?
Sometimes, because especially working for Channel 5, because Channel 5 have done some really crap shit against people in our culture and certain things and certain documentaries that they portrayed. So you say you work for Channel 5 and you get this little look sometimes, and I'm like, no, I'm the person who's trying to change it from the inside in my own little way.
Sure.
Or what I can control. It's sometimes it's difficult, and sometimes there is a bit of pressure because, like, you're conscious, especially when you're doing something that involves our culture, like, you know, I can't mess this up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people watching, there's people who know you work with this channel and stuff like that.
Sometimes. Obviously, we're in somewhat different industries, but my similar experience to that is recently I've been going to a lot of these investor talks where investors are fundamentally startups are pitching their business ideas to investors looking to receive investment. And I remember one of the most recent ones I went to was on Wednesday night. I turn up, you know, I don't even know what to wear to these occasions, right? And normally I just wear like black t-shirts and like, you know, chinos and pair of Stan Smiths. I dress up a little bit. So I come through in like a red Ralph Lauren shirt. Probably the wrong idea because I turn in and everyone's looking at me. And in my mind is looking at me for two reasons. One, because I'm like probably one of the youngest people in the room. Or three reasons. Thirdly, because I'm black. And the other one is because the shirt is a wild, strong color, very vibrant. Everyone's wearing like dark blues and black colors. And I look around because everyone's looking at me. And I'm like, oh, wow. This is another environment where I guess I'm the only person here. So then my pressure is now I have to go above and beyond. Now any kind of negative stereotypes about my people, I have to go hard to dissipate. But at the same time, I think I've been fortunate enough to kind of become quite at peace with who I am and quite comfortable in these, you know, somewhat uncomfortable environments. And I see some people kind of put on their... put on their mask to like assimilate.
Yeah.
And what I found is I could just really just be myself. I roll my sleeves up. People see the tattoos, the ears are pierced. I say words in probably the incorrect way. I add my own little vernacular. And people really just, for the most part, some people who aren't, are just drawn to that authenticity. And I hate that word. But it's the idea of you just being you and people really just drawn to that rather than you pretending to be somebody who knows how these people interact and engage with each other. I just pull up and say, yo, what's up? My name's AJ. Like, what do you guys do? It's like, oh, AJ, oh, it's great. so it's a great environment. I mean, before, I used to hate those kind of environments. I'd always shy away from them. You kind of would like to know, you know, what the dynamics of or the place you're going to before. And when the dynamics maybe aren't in your favor, you're like, oh, yeah, shit, I might just want to miss.
Yeah, I've been in situations like that, and when you're walking and like there are certain times, especially in the summertime, I wear my African attire because I like, that's the only thing that keeps me cool. And I've been to a situation whereby I was down dressed for an event and everyone was wearing black tie. I didn't know, literally I got an invite to go to, he was the former ambassador to Serbia and it was he lived in Pimlico at the time. I don't know if he still lives there, and he was in the penthouse. So we all get there. It was for a One Young World event. Usually One Young World events are quite informal. You just dress well, like what I'd wear. So I was just wearing chinos, Vans, and a top and a jacket. And everyone's really suited and booted. And I look at the concierge and I'm like, I think I'm underdressed. And he literally said to me, says like, don't worry about that. Just be yourself. When you get up there, you'll be fine. And literally, I got up there and it was just like, no one cared what I was working, what I was wearing, as long as I was speaking about something that they could engage with, interact with. They didn't see what I was wearing. So like, if I'm in a room and I do like now, I don't like wearing, I try and avoid wearing a lot of black. Mm-hmm. So I will be the guy who's wearing something like this, where it's quite bright.
I know he's wearing yellow.
Yellow. Yeah, I'll be wearing yellow, and everybody in the room is wearing like gray or black. And I'm like, it's not because I want to stand out. I'm like, everybody wears black. Everybody wears gray. Everybody says, oh, I want to be different, but you're all wearing the same bloody color. Wow. Like, you know,
making some indirects towards me and my wardrobe.
No.
I'm wearing all black.
No, but there's certain times I wear all black. I'm just like, you know, I'm not in the mood today. I'm just going to wear all black, or I'm going to wear something color, or I'm going to wear gray. I think people need to get away from the fact that just because there is this thing of where black people like to be bright and colorful in the things that they wear, that means we're portraying a particular stereotype. No, it's just because we like that thing. If a white person is wearing something bright and colorful and they may only do that in the summertime, are we saying that only that's what they do in the summertime? And then the whole other time we should just wear black and gray? I'm like, it's a reflection of our weather as well. It's very gloomy. It's very dull. So everybody wears dark colors. And I'm just like, nah, just wear, look, wear orange Christmas Day. Like, you don't have to deal with the same traditional colors.
I can't do that. My issue is like, I sweat crazy. Like,
yeah, I do as well.
So I keep the dark colors just to be safe.
Yeah. It is what it is. I'm more about the interactions and how I can, when people talk, I can relate. Do you get one? If they understand where I'm coming from, depending of whatever you're wearing or where you're from and your culture, we all have a particular connection, and it's how we can help each other to go forward in a certain way, like regardless. So yeah, man.
That's very true. So I also had another event, and I was with these two investors and I was demoing a product to them. Mm-hmm. And initially I came with one of my colleagues, and my colleague is kind of a bit more familiar with their experience, their backgrounds than I am. So they were just vibing, connecting, and I was like, oh, wow, these guys are really kicking off. But when I decided to like to just go through the product and like, again, showcase my knowledge of the product and the service that we offer, there's just this connection and I kind of kicked up. And I saw the conversation go from like those two interacting with him to them just solely interacting with me, and them just getting dinner for me and just wanted me to like go out with them and go to Bristol where their office is. And I've never been to Bristol before, so it's like lit. And I'm like, yes, get to go to Bristol, new experiences, all from, again, fundamentally just knowing your shit. So I think the main takeaway from that is if you just are confident in your ability, know your shit, then nothing else will really matter.
Yeah, it's true. There have been certain occasions where knowing the stuff that I do in depth has helped. And sometimes me just saying yes to an opportunity that I don't really know about and just learning stuff properly, and being able to show that when I do meet these people again, I know what I'm talking about. And there have been situations where people know my skill and be like, no, we're going to put you in this uncomfortable position because we know you've got the skill to get what we want from it. Which has happened a lot of times, especially with One Young World. And I kind of like them for that because they're always pushing my skills or giving me problems to solve. I like solving problems, especially when it comes to media stuff and techie stuff. I know your shit is definitely one of those things that can take you far, and then people gravitate to be like, oh my God, this guy actually knows, this is what we're looking for. He knows what we're talking about. He's gone in more in depth than we even know. Let's give him this opportunity to do this or to do that.
So we should probably get rolling with this podcast. So I'll do my little intro.
Well, good. I'll keep quiet now.
I need to work on an intro. I don't know. Like, I changed it. I had like one intro that I patented for like the first season. And I thought, hey, maybe I'll just try something new. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, this is season 2 of the Bedroom to Boardroom podcast. Today we have a guest who was fortunate enough to attend one of the Spieler events we held. Time flies. It feels like yesterday, but I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. Somewhere in like Deptford or New Cross. So ladies and gentlemen, with no further ado, I'll introduce you to our guest. Would you prefer Jamal or James?
Jamal.
Jamal, perfect. So Jamal, I know a lot about you because we've had some amazing talks. I think I was drinking wine. I tend to do my best introductions with a relatively glass of red wine in my hand. But the people listening don't know about you. So please tell us a little bit about your life, what you're doing right now, and what makes you so special.
So I'm Jamal once again. I am a producer for Milkshake on Channel 5. I also do some media consulting for a charity called One Young World. Apart from that, I'm just a football fanatic and I do lots of media stuff. That's a little bit about me. But my day-to-day...
Why I was drawn to Jamal, sorry to interrupt, was what you do. So typically, and I think we mentioned this before, like growing up, we're kind of forced to go into a few different avenues when it comes to studying. It's the accountancies, the engineering has become slowly popular, but prior to that, it was the accountancies, the maths, the businesses, medicine, anything which our parents thought would put us in best stead to go into those professions because they were safe professions and, you know, can have a nice stable life and a stable income. But you didn't go the traditional route. You studied something different. So please tell us about that.
Yeah, so I was very lucky enough. I went to school in Ghana for about 10 years. So I left England when I was 8 or 9. I can't really remember. It was about 8 or 9. I came back when I was about 19. And so about 10, 11 years I lived in Ghana. And I initially was going to go for the safe route, as you do when you're in junior secondary school or in college. When your friends are picking stuff like accountancy and want to be doctors, I was like, fine, I'm going to be a lawyer then. That's what I'm going to do. And I told my guardians, my aunt and uncle, looking after me, he's like, right, I'm going to go to law school. So I'm going to go to college. I'm going to study stuff to go to law school afterwards, after college. And I didn't do too well on my exams. I wasn't focused enough. I didn't do too well. And it became a conundrum. It was just like, well, I tried to focus on this one thing. What am I going to do? I didn't know what I was going to do. And my aunt came to me one morning. And she's very religious, and she's always tried to plan the stuff that we do with our lives and guide us in whatever shape or form. And she was like, right, you're going to go into media. I was like, what? We watch TV. We don't necessarily ever think we can be that person behind the camera. You only see people. Like, especially in Ghana, you see a lot of people in front of the camera because you're in Africa. You get to see more black people than you do in England. Well, that's because we're in Africa. But... she was like, yeah, you're going to work in media. Your cousin owns a production company. I was like, oh, yeah, he does. So you're going to go do some work experience with him and you're going to learn the ins and outs of doing media. And I was like, okay. And she explained to me the reason why she thought I would be best at that is because I was always the kid connecting all the gadgets in the house, like trying to connect the VCR to the TV to record stuff off the TV or trying to connect the TV to... like hi-fi system and putting ins and outs and doing all sorts of crazy stuff with the wiring that I had in the house or that was around me to reconnect stuff. And she just thought someone who does that and didn't have any training or didn't read manuals, just figured things out. She knew that practically and creatively that would be something I should go into. So yeah, that's how I got into media. It was all my aunt. So even when, and then I came back to England, went to college, studied media, went to university and just grinded to get a job in TV production. I even wanted to be in films or TV. As long as I was working in media and I was being a creative, that's all that I wanted to do after that.
So you just mentioned like grinding to get into this industry. What was that grind like? How long did it take?
So I'm going to show my age a bit here, but I graduated from university in 2009.
Okay.
I didn't get my first full-time media job until 2014. So it took
that's me... That's a long grind.
Took me 5 years to get my first media job. And I did freelance work. And when I mean freelance work, there were certain jobs I did not get paid for. I just did it because I wanted the experience. Mm-hmm. And I did work for a few... I worked for a charity for like... 4 or 5 months, and I did a lot of technical stuff, did a lot of editing. They were an advertising charity and they had their own awards ceremony. So I used to take in all the videos that people are sending for the awards, and if they hadn't encoded them correctly, I would go in, re-encode them, resize them, do a bit of edits and re-upload them onto their award site. So I did that on and off for about 3 years. And then it was literally just a grind, like wherever I could get the opportunity to do some media, I would do it. And then I actually fell out of love with it because I was just not getting the opportunities, even though I was trying so hard. Maybe I wasn't looking in the right places, or maybe I just thought I wasn't good enough. So I literally just ended up working in a pub And I was literally like, well, this is something that I like doing. I like interacting with people. It kind of, working the pub got me out of my shell a bit. So I was literally just training to go work in a pub and be a pub manager. That was it. And I was coaching a women's football team at the time. And I was doing a few bits of media and running their social media pages and stuff like that. But it literally was just like, I don't think I'm ever going to get into media. It was a bit tough because my mum was always pushing me, when are you going to get a proper job? Working the pub isn't a proper job. Get a proper job. But it was when my dad was always, both my parents were very supportive, but my mum was always pushing me. And it was when, because my dad is really laid back, it was when he was like, right, I don't think this media thing's going to work. I've supported you to do this. I think you should become like a plumber or a mechanic or something like that and earn some money, because they make a decent amount of money, but it wasn't for me. And then luckily one day my cousin, he used to work in sales for Channel 5. He's just like, look, here's some jobs I found. Just apply for them. I don't know anyone on the creative side because it was in two different buildings. Just apply for it and see what happens. I wasn't too sure. I kind of like had my mindset on like, I found an industry that I like working in as a pub. I can just work there, be a manager, do something else. Maybe later along in life, if I have a bit of money, I can start doing some media stuff afterwards. So I applied for these two jobs. I heard back from one of them from Milkshake. And at the time when we started, it was live TV. I'd never worked in live TV before. I hadn't worked in media for about 2 years because I'd fallen out of love with it. I ended up doing a course, like a short master's in software testing. So I was going to get into that. And I was like, this is not creative enough for me. I don't want to do that either. So I go to the interview. Haven't worked in media for a very long time. And then I sit in front of the ladies who interviewed me, and it literally was an hour and a half of me just telling them stories about my life. That was it. And I got the job, which was weird. But I remember one of the questions, I think in Preston, because they were like, oh, you work with a few celebrities. Like our presenters, they are like the celebrities for the kids, and the kids love them. And they're like, oh, you're going to have to work with a few celebrities. Who is the celebrity you've worked with, and why did you enjoy it? And at the time I was coaching a football team, and I just said to her, I coach 24 women. You get different temperaments. You don't know how someone's going to react on a day. If you can get through that on a day-to-day basis, then those would be my celebrities, working with 25 extraordinary women who, some of them still now play football, some of them haven't, they probably retired. And at the time, the team was all women-based for Milkshake. There was only one of a guy. And then when I got the job, there was two of us. So that's kind of what helped me get the job. And I didn't have any live TV experience whatsoever. And luckily, it was a position where they were like, no, we'll train you for 3-4 weeks for you to get ready to work on live TV. And that was really amazing. And that's just, my career has just, well, I would say flourished from there. It's kind of just grown from there. So I started off as a multi-skilled operator. So working on the live show in the morning, I would be the person who would count the presenter in and out of their links. So the links is where you see the presenter on TV just after an advert or a program. And depending on who the presenter is, sometimes you can hear us in their ear, you can hear us counting and stuff like that. So yeah, that's how it started. And last year became a producer for Milkshake. So yeah, that's kind of, yeah.
So what I loved about that story is that 5-year grind and fundamentally just not giving up in order to like pursue your passion. And why that's so relatable to me is, you know, I graduated. So you feel like most people, you don't really know. I mean, most people anyway, you don't really know what you want to do. You just have an idea that I just want to, you know, live a great life, be able to provide for my family. But throughout this process, there's particular passions or interests that you have. And then the road to get into those industries where your passions lay is never straightforward. And what I see is many people, because the destination isn't as linear as they thought it was, they tend to just quit and fall off. And whether they share this with other people, there's always that element of regret that, oh, I wish I had, you know, pursued that, even when, you know, it didn't necessarily seem it was going to work out. And I think that's really what separates, you know, successful people from people who haven't reached the same levels of success, whatever people quantify success as, is that ability to just accept the ambiguity of like what the next stage is. And in your case, this should just work your ass off for free.
Yeah, literally.
Don't take a check.
I used to work for a production company in the daytime, and in the evening I would go do my bar job from Monday to Friday. So I literally was working two jobs at just because I wanted to work in media. So that was like, that was my passion.
Sound lazy. I'm like, working one job and I'm like complaining.
But I think over those 5 years, it's helped me to see things differently when I was doing, now that I am in media. So I did software testing, and software testing is trying to find problems within someone's programming and seeing things a bit differently. And so one of the first things when I did the course, my uncle was telling me, because he is a software tester, he said, a zero in software testing is not a negative. It's actually a positive. And I looked and I was like, yeah, but zero is always a negative. Because no, sometimes you have to find a zero in a positive situation, and trying to find a solution to make that zero positive and not a negative. And it was really weird. And so being a software tester helped me solve problems. And I've had a few problems at Milkshake when we're trying to connect equipment, or we're trying to get the shot for a particular thing that we're filming. The training from software testing actually helped me in my media career. Me working in pubs has helped me communicate with people. Like, first, I was the most... I would never talk to anybody. I was very shy. But when you're working in a pub, you're forced to talk to the customers because you want them to come back. If I hadn't worked in a pub, I would not be talking to you on a podcast. That helped me start up my own podcast. I was like, well, I can talk now. I can talk to other people. And I've been very lucky where I've talked to people all over the world, in Thailand, in China, in America, and in South America and stuff like that, and even in Africa and bits of Africa. So it's all those things combined that I'd learned from that 5-year grind to working live TV. It was hard because I'm like, right, I've got to my destination. That was being in media. But all the stuff that I did has actually helped me now when I am as a producer, which is really cool.
Another thing I think we mentioned when we met was how the somewhat unconventional things you're doing outside of your job, the coaching, actually acted as a USP to allow you to get the job. And I think it's really important to maybe spend some time on that, because a lot of people don't understand the importance of like transferable skills. So the reason why I think, in my case, my previous place of employment, I got the job was a few factors. But again, it was the unconventional things I did outside of the regular like 9 to 5 hours. It was, in my case, some of the coaching, podcasts, we were trying to scale up, the other endeavors we were focusing on. And I think it's important that people, if you're not necessarily given an opportunity, I mean, shit happens, make something of the lemons that life gives you.
Definitely.
You're a clear example of that.
Yeah, like working as a football coach, that made me able to work with a team and be ahead of a team, and convince them in a good way that we're going to win this football match. And if I can transfer those skills...
You really ever did.
We never got relegated.
That's not something to be proud of. That's the bare minimum.
We didn't get relegated. That's not on my record. Look, there's some Premier League managers out there who'd be relegated.
Good point.
So taking that skill to into Milkshake, is you can now run a project and you convincing the people and the presenters and your runners that, okay, those things that we're doing is going to help our channel be number one, or we're going to need to get the best creative out of this. Doing software testing helps me solve problems and see a deeper meaning into things. Working in a pub helped me learn how to communicate with people and somewhat sell things. I'm not the greatest salesman in the world, but I took the bit of me interacting with a stranger. You know, if I had never worked in that pub, me and you would have never had a conversation because I would have just sat in the corner, ignored everybody, and then just gone home. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, great event, whatever, I'm going home now. But you meet so many different people coming into pubs, and your first impression is to them is, oh, I like that barman, I'm going to come to this pub again. That makes sales, and then you get a wage, and you get stuff like that. So it is always important to not take the job that you're doing now for granted and take the skills out of it to another job. Like, I worked in Primark years ago. I worked in retail. And it's hard, but it helps you be a hard worker. Like, you have that, what's the word I'm looking for? The stamina to get on with stuff. Yeah, that work ethic. So I will go on to a production. Like yesterday, I was in Western Supermarket doing some filming for a theater show. I was up at 5:30. I didn't get till 1 o'clock. I'd been filming from like 10 o'clock all the way to 7 o'clock. That is like, with some people, they'll take a break, where in my head, I'm like, no, I need to get all my footage. I'm like, come on, we can do this. And I'm pushing the team to work on my level so we can get things done, because I know the stuff that we create is going to help the tour, because I can then use all that footage to promote on our social media so that people can go and see the tour. So it's always taking, just because you're not in the job that you're in now, doesn't mean that the jobs that you're in, you can't take certain things out of that to apply to the job that you want to be in. Because when you go into an interview and you do tell them examples of things that relate to the job that you want, they'll be impressed by that, because you found a unique way to tell them about something that they might not even have thought of. You know? So I always think that whatever job that you're in now, find the skill that you think that will help you to get that job that you want, so that when you go into the interview and you're telling them examples, because every time they ask you an interview question, I always think, give them an example or tell them a story and something. And it doesn't have to be a story that you think, oh man, I hope this story sticks. If your answer and your example is great, it will always stick. And if you just give them a simple answer and not add a story to it, they're not going to remember it. That's how I feel anyway. I always try and make sure that I've always got a story to tell with every question that I've got, depending on from whatever job that I've done.
That's actually a very good point on like interview skills. A lot of people like just suck.
Oh yeah.
The whole process. Mm. As you mentioned before, like you ask me, give me one example where I show leadership, and I just tell you, one time at work, I was a leader, and then that's it. First of all, that's not like impactful. You haven't really like made a point. You haven't given any evidence. You haven't really explained. And also, it's more importantly, not memorable. And like people who can really like craft a story and tell a story that really resonates and captures the listener's attention, I think are people who are great at interviews. To some degree, some people's skill set is just being a good interviewer. When it comes to the job itself, they're like trash at the job, right?
But yeah.
I've been met a few people out there just listen to an interview, like, oh, this guy's so amazing. This woman here is so amazing. And like they join the team, you're like, oh wow. where did I go? I was bamboozled.
Yeah. You just have to prepare. As I was saying before, if you have a story, add a story to it, because they'll remember that. I enjoy interview processes because it's a way for me to talk. And I'm just like, and I'm in there and I'm always trying to figure, okay, in a way you're trying to impress them because you want the job, but you don't want to impress them to the extent that, okay, you scare them in a way. you scare them of not giving you the job. I always think, always prepare. If you have a story to go with your answer, that's great. If you don't, I wouldn't say keep it nice and sweet. Just
make one up.
Yeah, make one up. They're not going to know if you're lying. but don't make it up where it's not. Yeah, don't make it up to like, it's not believable. Like, so.
Single-handedly led the whole sales team to.
Yeah, Whoa. Why are you applying for the job? Why are they not keeping you at every place? Why are they not making you like, why have they not promoted you? Always, it's that, I know it sounds cliche, but just be prepared. And you always have a story. There's something like, no one's life is that boring where they don't have a story to tell about something that's happened to them, you know, especially, and keep the stories to the workplace. Don't talk about stories about your personal life, you know? Just prepare. And you know what? Look for resources that are out there that can help you with interviews and that can coach you to get a job, especially with interviews. Because interviews, yeah, they do suck. You're meeting people for the first time that you don't know if that person's having a good day or not or whatever. You don't know what you don't know what they've gone through that morning or if they're having a good day or you just don't know. So you're going into a place where you've never met these people before. Just be yourself and don't be too nervous and just try and ask the questions the best you can, but always prepare. Like, always prepare. I did some filming last week with a friend who they are setting up a video course to help people apply for jobs and how to behave and how to answer questions for interviews. And it was really good. Like I was recording it, but I was listening to what they were saying. I was like, Jesus, I wish I had that when I was going for interviews. I had to learn a lot of this stuff by myself, going into interviews, making mistakes, asking other people. There was no YouTube was around, but it wasn't the way that it was now, where I can literally go onto YouTube right now and be like, interview skills. Is there an interview course that I can go on to help me land my dream job in the way? Just be prepared.
I remember some of the blunders I made in interviews and some of the feedback. And again, it's always weird because let's say you have these like group assessments, which is like quite traditional for people going into like these financial services roles. And like, I'm always trying to be the first person to put my hand up to like answer the questions when everyone else is kind of shy, to like show that, you know, I'm ready to, you know, be brave and whatnot. And one person gave me the most amazing bit of feedback. He's like, hey, I understand how like you're eager to like impress, but at the same time, you know, that eagerness does come off as like arrogance, as if you know it all. And I was like, wait, what? Like, wait, what? And never in my whole interviewing experience had I ever perceived the way by which I was coming across to be arrogant. I was like, wow, okay. And I took a step back, did some reflection. I was like, okay, this definitely does make sense. Me, my eagerness to answer all the questions to whenever there's a group task and everyone's a bit shy or nervous, I'm the one to like lead the team, can easily come across as someone who's arrogant, not a team player, puts himself above others. So I had to take a step back. And then in interviews, had to not be that person to put my hand up. And like, even though like I'm itching because no one else is putting their hand up and everyone's kind of shook. Yeah. I'm just there like I'm sat on my fingers like, no. And then eventually you realize that life is so interesting because perception and reality are sometimes are two separate, very, very separate things. And sometimes, you know, to us, our perception becomes the reality and how you perceive somebody may not actually be who they are, right? So sometimes when people meet me, if I'm in a like talkative mood, super chatty, like cool guy, like polite, sometimes I'm just listening to my music or I'm just focused and locked in. And I come across as like distant and aloof. And these are like two words that have been used to describe me. And I think we've met for a few drinks. I'm not an aloof guy, am I? I don't know. Tell me.
No.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty cool. So again, people's perception is interesting. Yeah. So part of like the interview dance, the salsa, the finesse, is all about really like mastering how you are perceived by other people because their perception of you becomes their reality.
Yeah, I had that recently. I had that at work recently. I have a one-to-one with my boss every other week to just update her on all the projects that I'm working on. And I walk in and the first thing she goes to me is like, oh, are you all right? I'm like, well, I'm good. And she was like, you're very quiet. You've been very quiet recently. I was like, I'm focused. Do you know how much work I've got to do? Every time I leave your office, you give me more work. I don't have time to chat to everybody. And she was like, no, you've been really quiet. And I just found out that she'd asked other people in the team if I was okay, which is great because she's trying to make sure that, especially now with mental health being the main focus, which is great. She just wanted to make sure that I was okay. And I went to one of my colleagues and I was like, look, man, if I'm too quiet, I'm in trouble. If I'm too loud, I'm in trouble. Like, where's the balance? Like, you can't have it both ways. Like, when I'm quiet, it's because I'm focused and I'm like, trying to get as much work done because I work on so many different projects at work. I'm trying to give as much as I can to make sure it's the best that it is. Because I am one of those people that all my work that I put out there has to be the best. And if it's not, and you make me put something out there that isn't great, I'll deny that I made it. I'll tell you to your face. You said I did not make that. My name is not on there. I didn't sign off on it. That's just me. And I always want to put my best foot forward. So it is frustrating when you get told, oh, you're really quiet. Are you all right? But in another way, they're just trying to make sure that they care. But I'm just like, look, I'm either loud or quiet. You're going to get some extremes of both. I can't be the one in the middle. Like, you're going to get one extreme or the other. So, yeah.
Another thing I want to touch upon, which is one thing we had in common, is I don't want to use the word coaching in my case, but coaching of like sports teams and not so great records. So, as with you, my team is yet to be relegated only because we are in the bottom league. So, there's nowhere else to go. There's no focus on that. And one thing that coaching has taught me is the importance of empathy. And it sounds so silly to say this. However, at one moment in my life, for a long period actually, I didn't necessarily understand what empathy was and how important it was, especially when you're trying to unify a group of people who, in most cases, come from totally different backgrounds, have totally different ideas of what good looks like, have totally different motivations. And the empathy piece to be able to relate to them on an individual level. And it's a great way to motivate them, make them feel cared about, and hopefully get them to buy in to that unified goal. Have you, what kind of things has coaching helped you develop in your personal, maybe professional life?
It took football, like coaching football is a little bit different because it's very passionate. And you're giving everybody your energy. I think the one thing I try to learn was to try and turn on my filter when I'm talking to people. Mm-hmm. Because I am one of those people that just go, F it, I'm just going to say whatever I want and I'm just going to hurt someone's feelings because I want to get the best out of you. And if that means hurting your feelings for you to get to the goal that I need you to do on that pitch, then that's fine. I don't care if I hurt your feelings. I want you to do this. I want you to do this now. But then I had to learn how to finesse it and try and, in a nice way, get them to do what I wanted them to do without them being upset or angry with me at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's a balance. And because you're dealing with different type of temperaments at different times, you don't know what that person is going through in their life before they come to football training or before they go to a match. You know, you just don't know. And that's with anyone who plays football, whether it's women or that's men, someone's temperament. If they're not on it that morning, someone's got on their nerves before a game or before training, and you tell them to do something and they say something back to you, you then have to reflect, oh, they're not always like this. They're always up for the game or they're always up for training. What is wrong with them? And then you have to be, then have to make sure that whatever I'm saying isn't going to make them even more upset or more angry about the situation that they are, and just trying to get information out of them and taking them aside away from the team and making sure they're all right and I can get the performance that I want from them in training or during a match and stuff like that. So always, I think the one thing it helped was me trying to filter myself when I was saying things. And then I started working at Milkshake. That didn't happen. It was very like very blunt again, and because you just, that's just how I am. But I think especially in training, you now have to, especially coaching, you now have to, is finesse the right word? You have to just be careful about how you talk to certain people at a certain time, because you don't know what they're going through. And I didn't notice when we played teams that didn't live in London, it felt more difficult because it's very hard for someone who lives in London to do a full-time job, finish whatever time, and then after that they have to go to football practice and you have other things to think about. I just think playing football in London compared to playing football, and this, I might be wrong, but this is just the thing that I've said, playing someone in Billericay or someone who doesn't even live in London, I feel like the life balance is a little bit difficult. They can put more time into it. I might be wrong, but that was just my observation when I played, when I coached. Even when I did play, you could just tell there was a different energy. Like the girls on the other team, you could tell that they train, they have more time to train more during the week. Where in London, I think we only trained maybe once a week or maybe twice a week. I think the life balance was a little bit different, and you could see that. Yeah, I'm rambling on about something completely different. But
In my case, what I see is, I don't know, it's interesting because I coach university sports, and having played the sport at university level, I saw a lot of students who were like on campus who were just very determined. And in this current university, Greenwich, the campus is like spread across. Mm. I don't know why they're so far apart, honestly. And I told my players, how far some of you live from university, I don't know how you manage to even go to lectures, because at times, right, and I shouldn't probably admit this, I was like 5 minutes walk from my lectures and I just didn't go. So I don't know how some of you guys attend. And I see a lack of commitment in some degree for those players who do live. And it's interesting. You think the players who lived far away would be less committed. However, as players who literally live an hour away, it's like an hour drive or an hour train every single week, they're there. It's the players who literally live on campus, 1 minute, 2 minute, 10 minute walks away, that never turn up. And it's interesting. And with those people, again, it's empathy piece. It's trying to understand like what their motivations are. So why isn't this person turning up to training when they really like, do they care about the team? Do they care about the sport? And then I take this all like quite personally, and maybe it's something I shouldn't. Well, like the failures of the team, I don't see as the team failing. I see as myself failing to help the team win.
Yeah, I felt that all the time. When the team lost, it hurt. I think, I know the players hurt, but it hurt me more because I put them in the position where I thought they could win, or I gave them something, where I gave them an observation and it didn't work, and they were doing something because I had told them to do that and it didn't work out the best way that we thought it would. So it hurt. Like, we'd finish playing a game and we'd lose and I'd be like, distraught. I'd be like, oh, right, how am I going to fix this? How are they going to believe in me next week when I tell them to do something? You know, I always took it harder than anyone on the team. I hate losing. It does my head in. I don't like losing. And I'm very competitive.
I wouldn't say I hate losing. I just love winning. Like, but again, at the same time, to be honest, I think, you know, adversity introduces a man or a woman to themselves. And then sometimes, so the team I played for, and I played in American football, the team was just undefeated. And it was a great experience to never lose a game. It was awesome. And then you come to coach a team, you like struggle to win. And it's like, ah. And then, but the takeaways that I've taken away and I've learned from in our many defeats has been great. And I'm confident that, you know, we're just building the pieces together. And I'm confident in the next two or three seasons, we will turn around and we're going to go win the league, win the next league and keep winning. Whether or not I am the best coach to help people on that journey, like it's to be seen. I don't think so. But I'm confident in the team, similar to like when you left your team and you started doing well. I'm confident that the minute I resign, they're just going to go on this crazy undefeated spree. And I'll be watching it from a distance like, oh, wow. I guess that was the problem. Shit.
Yeah, I think that was the problem. Yeah, they've done. I still follow them, the team now on Instagram and on Twitter, and they're doing way, way better than I was there, which is just probably shows that it wasn't my I wouldn't say destiny, wasn't my forte to be a football coach. Would I do it again? Definitely. I think maybe I'd be a bit more prepared and focus on it a bit more. I was focused, but I think I could do better. I think it's one of those things. It's a chapter in my life that I don't think is finished yet, and I'd like to go back later on. Maybe if I'm more established in the job that I am in now, or I run my own company, which would give me more time to focus on coaching. But yeah, I think I'll definitely go back to it later on in life.
Yeah. So one thing I love to talk to people about is maybe the content, the books, podcasts that they're listening, that have given them, you know, that little 1% edge to succeed or to develop to whatever point they are in life. What would you give in regards to book, podcast, YouTube video recommendations to a young graduate, or even maybe somebody earlier, a young 19-year-old version of yourself?
The So if it's for media, there is a YouTube channel called Indie Mogul that I've been watching. I've been watching it for years now. And they have a podcast as well, but I like watching the videos. I like to see the visuals. It's weird because the podcast is all right, but when you watch the videos, it gives more content to the things that they're talking about. And they do a lot of tutorials and they give you real world scenarios on how certain effects or certain filming techniques will help you in your production. Mm-hmm. So I think Indie Mogul is really great. And their podcast isn't too bad either. If I want to listen to something that isn't around media and I just want to have a laugh or I just want to hear stupid opinions, I listen to a podcast called The Brilliant Idiots.
Man, that's a wild one, man.
Yeah.
I've had to tone away from that because sometimes it's a bit too much for me.
Yeah, it is. I've been listening to them for years. I listen to that and I listen to The Breakfast Club. I listen to podcasts. And The Brilliant Idiots, it's just, I just want to hear their stupid opinions. And sometimes I'm like, no, if I don't take it too seriously, because the stuff that they talk about and the tangents that they go off is just like, yeah, you guys are just taking the mic now on certain things. But hence why
I don't think so. And that's the funniest thing is I really don't think so. I really think they just sometimes it's just a level of naivety. No, because I thought this is like a joke that I'm not in on because these guys just. And I listen to like Wax, for example. I'm like, yo, this guy is.
Oh, yeah, he's an idiot. He's an absolute. The stuff that he comes up with, I'm just like, yeah, you definitely are an idiot. Like, I don't know. I definitely don't think he's putting it on. I think he's genuinely an idiot and he doesn't know what he's doing. How he's managed to get so far in his life, I do not know, but kudos to him. Like, he's doing his thing. I would not want to have a fight with him. He's probably 3-4 times my size. Yeah, but like
6'6".
Yeah. But no. But definitely for media stuff, Indie Mogul is probably the one that I'm really on at the moment, especially just to, and I don't even watch it because I'm doing a production at a time. I'm the type of person who just watch Indie Mogul or any other stuff, but definitely Indie Mogul just because, and I think it's always good to see new techniques because you never know when something you've watched will come into play. You just never know. You'll be like, oh yeah, I watched this tutorial about this. I want to know what I'm doing now. Or I would refresh myself from watching a video from that. So yeah, definitely that for helping. And I'm into documentaries and I like seeing how people, not the behind the scenes of making a documentary, but how they've made their documentary. So I watch a lot of stuff on Vox. On YouTube as well, because they do documentaries on loads of things and they incorporate live action and animation sometimes, which is really cool. I like the format of how they produce their documentaries. But if you want to learn stuff, I'd definitely go to Indie Mogul. That is definitely the place. And they've been around for years. They've got loads of videos on YouTube. They've been around for years.
So Jamal, thank you so much for like blessing us with your presence. Do you have any?
No, thanks for having me.
Takeaways to share with our listeners.
The one thing I would say is, no matter what industry that you're in, keep learning. I am the type of person who will. I'm a bit of a geek. Most of the stuff that I know hasn't necessarily come from working. It's been me studying on my own, and a lot of people in the office are like, why are you continuously studying? Because I'm like, the kids behind me have the tools that I didn't have when I was studying. Things and technology is always changing, so no matter what industry that you're in, try and find some time in your day to make yourself better in the thing that you do, because no one's going to tell you to study, no one's going to tell you to learn this course. There probably are some people that will push you, but at the same time, you need to do that on your own. I try and make sure I learn a new technique or a new software. I definitely try and learn a new software every year. I always try and learn a new technique or a new graphic or a new piece of kit, whether it's a camera, whether it's a soundboard, where it's learning how to use a teleprompter. Always learn something. Always enhance the skills that you've got. Because look, there are, especially in the media industry, it's very competitive. I think in every industry it's competitive, so always just learn, always evolve, always find something new. Yeah, that's my takeaway.
thank you so much for sharing some time. Socials, where can people get you at?
I'm not really, you can follow me, but I'm not very active on the socials. I'm not really active. I think if I'm on Twitter, I'll get myself into trouble. I have said certain comments.
I might lose your job.
Yeah, I'm that type of person. I'll see something and I will react. Mm. And my girlfriend will be like, don't just get off Twitter because you're the type of person that will just go in and just wouldn't give a shit. Sorry, I'm swearing.
Yeah,
I'm the type of person on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. I forgot what is my Twitter. That's how bad it is. I don't even know my Twitter. If you follow me at Jamal K Campbell 1 on Twitter and on Instagram, I think it's J Kendall 1. Yeah, J Kendall 1 on Instagram. Yeah. I'm not the most interactive person on any of them. I literally just look at pictures and see what things are happening in the world and read people's comments. But if you do want to have a discussion with me on Twitter, that's fine. Just be aware I don't have a filter. And if you're an idiot, I'll tell you you're an idiot. And then after I explain to you why you're an idiot. That's me.
Perfect. More of the story, man. Get him at Twitter, beef with him and see what happens.
Yeah. Let's have a conversation. I always love having a debate on something, but yeah, just come with facts.
Perfect.
Wow. Thank you for taking some time to listen to all of that. I really appreciate it. Feedback makes the world go round. So what I'd like for you to do is please give us a follow on Instagram, bedroom2b. That's our socials. Please give me some feedback as to how we can improve. Alternatively, message me on LinkedIn. So AJ, surname is Alpha Lima Alpha Oscar. Feedback makes the world go round. So I'm eagerly anticipating how we can make the next few episodes much better. Again, thank you so much for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.